You're about to enter Nowhere, California.
If you like what you hear, please search for us on iTunes. Look at Nowhere, California, all one word. You can also find us on Facebook.com/Nowhere, California. Please hit like.
And as always, we are very hungry for your feedback. So if you have any requests or anything like that, please send your love, your hate, or your apathy to Nowhere_California@yahoo.com.
Welcome to Nowhere, California Presents, our conversation with James Bresnik. Hey, it's Josh, and I've done enough of these, so you listeners should know the drill. I'm going to be sitting and talking with a great filmmaker on the phone, and you're going to be hearing about his new project, and project that I was lucky enough to check out with this great filmmaker, James Bresnik, is his film Pernicious. This is a horror movie of horror movies. This is a pretty good movie. It's based in Thailand. These three female leads go to Thailand to teach kids English and stumble into something very demonic. As always, I can tell you everything under the sun about this movie, but that'd be a waste of time. So here is the conversation with James Bresnik. We are now joined by James Bresnik. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, man. I had an early shift this morning. Now I'm doing what I want to do is talk to a great filmmaker. Honestly, in the world of horror lately, it's hard to find something as good as your movie, Pernicious, right? That's the correct way to pronounce this, right?
Yeah, Pernicious.
Pernicious, cool. There's a lot of different ways I like to jump into these interviews, and this has became like my go-to. When did your passion of filmmaking begin?
So, I mean, I've always liked movies my entire life, but I really got into film when I was younger. My dad got very sick, and he was having a liver failure, and all I could do with him was watch movies. So, like, every day I'd come home from school and go up to his room and we'd watch movies together. That's when I realized, like, film was something that, like, everybody could share, and I really wanted to create stuff to, like, share with people. So I became very narrow-minded, only wanted to do film. that was like my entire life, and thankfully my dad got better. I'm still watching movies together to this day. We just saw Poltergeist the other day together.
How was that one?
No comment.
That's what I've been hearing lately on that one. But to quickly move on away from that, have you always had your sights set on the world of horror when you were starting?
Yeah, I've always had, like, an attraction to horror films. I always like how horror films are like dark fairy tales for adults. Like, the violence within the movies are always a basic watch, but really just like how you can take a world and just kind of morph it and change it into whatever you want is kind of like that magical element to horror was always so interesting to me. And so, taking like ordinary people and putting them in extraordinary situations.
That's a good way to look at the world of horror. Were there any filmmakers that you looked up to as you began your career in film?
Well, I've always had a love for the films of Eli Roth. I remember Cabin Fever was one of the first movies I actually went to special features on. and Hostel is one of my all-time favorite movies. I also, Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, Takashi Miike, Park Chan-wook, Stanley Kubrick, Alfred Hitchcock.
Some great people to be looking up to, man.
thank you. Yeah, and Martin Scorsese as well.
Oh yeah, definitely Scorsese. A few years back I had a chance to meet Eli Roth at Amoeba in Hollywood, and he was just an amazing person to talk to.
Yeah, Eli is one of the greatest people. I'm a huge fan of his movies, and I'm a huge fan of him as a person. I had the pleasure of working with him recently, and he's a very, very nice guy. And he's so passionate about horror. It's infectious, and it makes sense why he is the legend of horror right now. He's a living legend. He's amazing.
That is very true. How did you fine-tune your craft of filmmaking, and did you go to school for it, or did you just go kind of trial by fire?
I was in film school for screens, you know, dropped out, and I like to think of, like, every film as my film school. You know, I've made 11 features now. I'm actually under production on my 11th feature film. And each time I do it, I learn something new. So, you know, I get better as it goes along. I've been doing this since I was 18, and now I'm 23 years old. So, you know, I mean, I'm still very young, but when you think about it, that's like 5 years of making. So, it's kind of interesting in the long run. You know, because I've learned a lot, and much more than I think I would have ever learned in school.
That's definitely a good way to look at that. Where did the story for Pernicious come from, and what inspired the script?
So, the story came from I was approached to do a horror movie in Thailand, so I was doing all this research on, you know, Thai folklore and, you know, dark magic practices that are in Thailand, because Thailand has a rich folklore and, like, you know, all this magical stuff goes on there, and I know that they believe in, like, you know, the dark arts and stuff was a negative, but they believe it exists, so... You know, I've always been attracted to, like, necromancy and all that kind of stuff, so I checked it out, and I found that there was a real Thai practice where they would encase a child, usually a baby, in solid gold, because they thought that the spirit would be kept in the gold, like the gold would hold the spirit, and it would bring good luck. And they usually coat the child in, like, the blood of tortured animals, and I was like, well, that's a horror movie right there. Like, that's the movie. That's what I'm going to make this movie about. And hence, The Golden Girl.
Yeah, that I had a feeling when they were talking about the origins of it during the movie that there was reality to it, and now that I know that it is true, it's insane.
Yeah, it's a real thing. And, like, some people still do it on the, like, and sell it on the black market, like, now. But it was really, like, prevalent in the 1800s.
Wow. Was the statue that was used in the movie one of those statues, or was it kind of a mock-up?
No, that was a life cast of the actual little girl.
Wow.
So I had them do, like, a plaster cast of the little girl. So it was, that's her. It's a statue of her. You know, to her exact face.
Wow, that's pretty cool. With shooting in Thailand, was there any kind of limitations that you ran across, or were there any speed bumps during that time?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there's always, you know, trials and, you know, tribulations that you have to deal with when making film, but one of the things that I really experienced was a language barrier. Like, you know, I had a translator for my translator. I ended up having, like, a crew that was, you know, 90% Thai, and, you know, we had 110 people on the crew, and, like, you know, 90 people only spoke Thai. They didn't speak English. So it was very, like, you know, interesting in that respect. But, like, you know, we learned how to, I learned how to communicate, and we learned how to communicate, and, you know, run effectively. I spent, like, 3 months in Thailand. And another thing is, you know, we dealt with the floods. We shot during monsoon season. So, like, while I was in Thailand, you know, it was raining super hard and there was flood, so not only A, did the rain cause sound issues, but B, remember that shot when they come up to the house on the boat and they stop at the pier and walk up the pier to the house?
Yeah.
That was the front lawn, and I had them build the pier because it was so flooded. They originally were supposed to drive up, but they couldn't, so we had a boat.
Makes more of the shot, though. That, like, I would never have guessed that to be the front lawn. I totally thought it was, like, a house, like, on the riverbank, basically.
Yeah, it definitely adds to the movie. It's one of those happy accidents, I feel.
That's pretty nuts. How was it working with the cast? And you were talking about the crew a little bit, but how was it working with the cast and crew during this filming?
Oh, it was amazing. It was a magical experience, and, you know, it's something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. You know, and the three girls and I, you know, bonded very closely. I mean, we spent, like, you know, months and months together in Thailand. So it's, you know, it's we've all been really, really dear friends ever since. And I've worked with each of them individually since then.
That's pretty cool. And this horror movie is kind of one of those rare ones where you're so, like, in the world of horror, it's kind of the norm for the villain or the main killer to be male, but it's prominently female as the attackers. What are your thoughts about that kind of history in film, and what made you kind of decide to take the, I guess, the female route for this?
No, I've always loved
Very true.
As a male, I've had my fair share of being terrified of ex-girlfriends. So, I definitely think, women can be really freaky. The horror genre has a predominance of female fans. And so that's why, a lot of the horror is geared towards, scaring women. Because majority of horror fans are female. It's statistically shown. So I think, flipping that on its head and giving women somebody to root for is a little bit more interesting and entertaining. And as well as the fact that, I think that we're living in a society at the moment where, I know women's rights just passed a very long time ago, but I think right now it's all just starting to become into fruition as people are starting to think, hey, it's not right that there aren't more strong female leads, and I agree. We saw that with Mad Max. I loved that, Furiosa was the most badass character in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Totally agree on that.
I think it's high time that we start supporting more females in the workplace as well as in film. And I definitely try to support that with the movies that I make.
That's a great way to take that path. We talked a little bit about the violence in this movie, and there's some great shots
also,
in this movie.
Let it be known. I mean, maybe it ends up being negative that I say this, but I had a movie with three beautiful, strong female leads and no nudity.
That is true. That is very true.
Yeah.
And
obviously, I wasn't shy about showing anything else because there was a lot of violence.
Yeah, that is true. And honestly, the fact of no nudity kind of is I guess it would be, you could be commended for that, because you'd think, in this type of movie, it'd be left and right. But, like you said, with the strong female leads, the brutality is the thing that needs to be there.
Yeah.
And speaking of the brutality, how did you develop the special effects shots? They seem to be more practical than anything else.
Yeah, it's a lot of practical effects, and I worked very closely with Jeremy Cruz, who is my effects artist from Toadcat. He's the effects wizard behind movies like August Underground, which is a movie that's a fake snuff film that was considered to be so realistic looking that police looked into it. And he's such a genius when it comes to effects. I mean, the man is so brilliant, and I've worked with him ever since. So we worked together very closely. Storyboarded out the effects and really found ways to make them pop. And the guy's he's a genius. He makes it look so good.
That's cool. You got to have the right special effects when it comes to horror movies. And I guess a good question to ask now would be, since you're such a lifelong horror fan, what do you prefer yourself? I know there's two camps towards this. Do you prefer more practical effects, or are you cool with the computer effects too?
I definitely think by watching the movie, you can tell what I prefer more.
Yeah.
I go practical whenever I can. I think it looks better. Sometimes even if a practical effect looks slightly cheesy, I think it's better anyway, because that's part of what I love about the 80s horror films that I used to watch.
That's awesome. From the first draft of the script to the final cut, how do you feel about the finished product?
I'm very happy. I think it turned out really good. I'm happy with the movie. I think it's definitely the movie I set out to make.
That's awesome to hear. And as the movie is seen by more people, what are your hopes for the movie as time progresses?
I hope that people enjoy it and, tell their friends and they let me know that they liked it, because I'm going to keep making them, but it's always great to hear from them. I definitely hope that it finds the right audience.
I'll definitely be spreading the word about this movie and everything, and I'll definitely let you know as my friends check it out what they think.
Awesome. I appreciate that, definitely. I think that, that's part of the world we live in today, that, you have to have this grassroots campaign. Part of what can make a movie well, and for anybody that's listening, but like it, and they not say anything. It's actually, more people will say something about something they don't like than something they do like. So we have to change that and go out there and say, hey, I like this. You should check this out.
And then maybe we can stop getting remakes of everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if enough people watch this movie and like it, I promise you there will be a sequel.
I would definitely love to see a sequel to this. Thank you so much, James, for talking with us. Before we go, do you have any upcoming projects that you'd like us to know about, and where can we find you online?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at James Cohen P. That's J-A-M-E-S-C-U-L-L-E-N.